part of that story. I'll be reading from Luke 10, 38 to 42, as well as John 11, 1 to 44. I'm just introducing this story to us this morning, so if you'd like to open there and follow along or just listen. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, they came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." And then John 11. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured the perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, so he went. When he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days, and then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daylight will not stumble, for they see by the world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Mary and Martha to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she answered. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." After she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and he is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews, who had been with Mary in the house comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came into the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Pastor Carl.
There's a lot of verses in our text this morning. Thanks for reading them all, Tina. There are a lot of places we could go with this message, because there are two stories here. We could spend a lot of time just on the first four-verse story. We could spend a lot of time thinking of Lazarus and the incredible miracle that happened there, and the analogy and the metaphor that is for God's resurrection power in our own lives, or the ways that we are bound up by our own sinfulness and selfishness, and how God frees us from that. There are a lot of places we could go. There are a lot of themes we could focus on in this morning's text. But we're in the middle of this series we're calling The Geography of Jesus. And so we want to pay attention a bit to the geography, to the place that Jesus finds himself in these stories this morning, most of all. Jesus finds himself in Bethany, or we find Jesus in Bethany. Bethany has one of two meanings. It sounds like there's some either double meaning or disagreement about this. Either house of affliction or house of figs. Seems like you ought to settle on one of those. Lazarus, it's interesting, means God my helper. So this is a story of Lazarus in Bethany, the house of affliction, getting unbound. We could go there. But that's not where we're going to spend a lot of time, about even the meaning of the place Bethany, the name. But I love the picture that we get, or should I say perhaps pictures that we get of Jesus in these stories. Because in these stories, Jesus' location is not only Bethany, house of affliction or figs, this small town near Jerusalem. Not only is his location in Bethany, but he is even more specifically located, I saw as I was reading this, among friends. That's the part I want us to focus mostly on this morning. What is it like, was it like, is it like to be a friend of Jesus? But first, let's pay a bit of attention to where geographically Jesus is and why does it matter. In reading an article, I heard the author say that if you want to know what will happen next in our tumultuous world, whether you're looking at an area like Iran or China or Russia and are wondering what's next, he says, we generally don't need spies or intelligence as much as a look at the geography of the actor state that we're inquiring about. Look to geography to make sense of it all. Where a nation is located means a lot about its future, about its plans, about its goals, about what it can do and can't do. Think about the incredibly bountiful, rich land location of our country and what it has created, a wealthy nation, a nation of wealth, a nation of people of wealth, because of the land we have inhabited and taken and made use of. Geography matters in world politics, in oppression and freedom, in so many things. I had become newly aware of this over the past years as Katrina was in college, and there was, I think, a class she took called The Geography of Racism. And there's geographic variations of various subjects that they looked at the geography of and how geography mattered in all of these world issues and problems. The same applies to many of the Bible stories that we read. This article went on to say, we frequently read stories about people in the Bible traveling from one place to another, but going maybe by a non-direct route. Why did they take that route? Well, check a map. You'll probably find the answer. As you read through the Gospels, you'll notice that when Jesus visits Jerusalem, he frequently spends the night in Bethany, as opposed to staying in the city. Now, maybe the temperatures were just cooler there. There weren't all the buildings around. Why did he do that, though? Maybe it didn't just have to do with getting away from the hustle and bustle or the heat of the city. But there's probably at least two reasons. First reason is fairly obvious from our text this morning. He had good friends that lived in Bethany. When you travel, do you like to stay with friends or in a hotel if you had a choice? Generally friends, right? There were probably inns, there were probably places that Jesus could have stayed, but in Bethany, he had friends. Rochelle and I, instead of going to hotels generally, we like to find, now that Airbnb is around, it's easy to find local people with which to stay. We enjoy that kind of thing. Some people would rather not interact with people so much and don't enjoy that. For us, we really enjoy that. We're planning to go to Boston in a few weeks to celebrate our 30th anniversary, and which was last month, but we're celebrating next month because that's when the Phillies are playing in Boston. But anyway, I digress. We found a place for $40 a night in someone's home. A nondescript bi-level in a small town between Boston and Cape Cod, so we can go both ways. So yeah, partly it's because I'm cheap too. But we're going to get to be with and spend a few days in a home with someone. Actually, long story short, it's an 87-year-old lady who lives there whose husband built this house back in the 60s. She's there by herself, and now the family has started this Airbnb thing so that she can have people around. I'm sure she'll be able to tell us a lot about the area and give us good tips, and we'll make a new friend. Jesus liked to make friends. Think about Jesus, God made flesh. Pretty big vacation trip he took to earth. Jesus surrounded himself with common folks, with, in fact, generally the commonest of folks and not the elite. Jesus stayed with, lived with, interacted most with the common folks. Can you imagine the difficulty of Jesus, or at least the complexity of having friends? Being friends when you are the Son of God makes things a little complex. I don't think of myself as a Son of God in the same way that Jesus was, but as a pastor, I know it's complex enough having friends. When you move to a new area, as we did 14 years ago, and don't know anyone, and mostly everyone you get to know you're working for or leading or pastoring or being paid by, depends how you see it, and yet they're also your only friends. It gets a little weird sometimes, right? Many of you have become much more friends to me at this point in the journey, 15 years almost later, than I see you probably first as friends rather than congregants, partly because, of course, my diminished role in leadership here. It has made it maybe even easier at times. Friends are important. Being among friends. Think about how you feel when you're able to be among friends. You can be honest. You don't need to keep up the facade. Not that pastors ever do that. But that place of honesty, of being open, able to be open, feeling free to be open, feeling safe to be open, that's friends. That's a location. That's the geography that I want us to look at this morning as Jesus interacts with these friends in Bethany. So that was probably the first reason that we often see Jesus staying the night in Bethany, even when he's going to Jerusalem. It's only about 2 miles away. In those days, what's that? A 45-minute walk maybe or so, something like that. So he could go in and out from Jerusalem even if he was staying in Bethany, if he had things he was doing in Jerusalem. Second reason isn't as obvious, but this author thinks it's pretty significant, and that is that numerous times in Jesus' ministry, he would take advantage of opportunities to get away from the crowds. His ministry years especially, imagine the toll it took on him, the drain that it was, ministering in the way that he did. He needed places to recoup, to retreat, to get away from the crowds. So Bethany, being about 2 miles from Jerusalem, isn't that far. It was far enough for Jesus to get away from the crowds of Jerusalem, to be able to separate himself at times. So not only were there friends there that he could connect with, but it also gave him a place to separate. We can learn more about his choice to stay in Bethany, though, if we look at a map. I don't have a map, don't have a PowerPoint. I'm going to ask for some volunteers to come up here and help me be a human map. You can be young or old, whoever's most eager. I need two or three of you. Jonathan, anyone else want to help out? Somebody, don't be scared, it's nothing hard. I see Tara. Okay, well, now we got more. Come on up. We will have Phyllis. Sorry, for those that you were so eager, we really only need about, well, we'll take three of you. Two of you go ahead and sit down. One of you two yet. Who wants to sit down? Actually, you sit over there. Kara, sit right here. Jonathan, I need you to, let's see, how do we want to do this? Okay, you're going to be directly west. Let me see. The other way around. I'm looking from your side. Kara, sit over here. You stay here. Kara, sit there. This is getting more complicated than I thought it was going to get. You may, if you wish. Let me figure this out. Jonathan. Okay. You sit right here like this and kneel down and lean down and put your head down on the next step. You're the perfect. This is why I let Phyllis sit down. Okay. All right. There you go. Perfect. Jonathan is the Mount of Olives, if you didn't know that. Do I still have this right? When we're looking at these, I always get dyslexic with the East and West. All right, back over here. Jerusalem is 2 miles to the west of the Mount of Olives. Bethany happens to be located on the southeast slope, sit right here, of the Mount of Olives. So if this perfect summertime VeggieTales version of Jesus might happen to be in Jerusalem and wanted to get away, he would actually go across the Valley of Kidron, up the Mount of Olives, back down the other side to the southeast slope where Bethany was. So from here, with the Mount of Olives in the way, could Jesus even see Jerusalem? He could get away. He could separate himself from all that Jerusalem meant. And we can think about that. But he could get away with just a 45-minute hike up over the mountain, stay in shape that way, and be over here away from Jerusalem. There's the geographic significance of Bethany in relationship to Jerusalem. All right, thanks, guys. That was helpful. (Clears throat) As with many things in my sermons, I probably should have rehearsed that. All right. As we say on trips, when things go poorly, well, at least you'll remember it more. So despite the roughness of that demonstration there, think about Bethany as this place that Jesus would go for retreat, for rest, for rejuvenation, for separation, and for connection. Bethany was an important place. Among friends in Bethany was even more important for Jesus. In Bethany, among friends, he depended. I got a sense of how Jesus actually depended on these friends to stay, for lodging, for food, for companionship, for protection from the crowds. Can you imagine Mary and Martha if people would have tried following from Jerusalem and tried hassling Jesus? Would they have let him in? He had even protection there among friends in Bethany. Jesus depends on his friends. That was a new thought for me. And as I think about these friends that we're seeing in these stories and their relationship with Jesus and ourselves that we might say we would want to claim and name that we are friends of Jesus, can we think of that connection as well, how Jesus depends on us if we're calling ourselves friends of Jesus? I think many times when we use that term, I'm a friend of Jesus, we think about the benefits that it gives us. I want us to, at least for this morning, to think about the benefit that Jesus gets from his friends. So what do we do with the Jesus we see in these stories? Jesus among friends in his retreat town of the House of Figs. Do we listen to him? Do we learn from him? Do we emulate him? Do we complain to him? Do we serve him? Get frustrated or maybe even angry at him and threaten him? Because all these things happen in these stories with the various characters that we see around Jesus, friends and otherwise, who are involved in these stories. And all of these reactions are common to those down through human history into today, including us, for those who have attempted to be in relationship with, followers of, friends of Jesus. It's a complicated relationship. The one who we call Lord is also our brother and friend. The one who we depend on for everything, we say, also depends on us. It's a complicated relationship, to say the least. There was a meme I saw online this week said, if following Jesus doesn't scare you at least a little bit, you're probably not doing it right. I think that kind of applies to what I'm thinking about this morning. It's not always, cake and ice cream or peaches and cream or whatever they say when we're a friend of Jesus, when we're following Jesus. Especially not, I think, if we're doing it right. In both of our texts, we see Jesus with friends, being himself, being his calm, self-defined, encouraging, powerful, disruptive self. We see him being patient with his disciples and friends when they don't get it. Repeating, okay, yeah, I said sleep, but I really meant, you know, he's dead. Or say things that don't make sense. Though even in his patient responses, there is forthright challenge of their misunderstandings. Jesus challenges his friends, trying to make clear to them that his disruptive presence in the world at that point in time is for their good and for the transformation of their thinking and to help them into the eternal kind of life that they were created for. And I believe the same can be said for his friends today. That Jesus gives us forthright challenges to our misunderstandings, trying to make clear to us that his disruptive presence in our lives, in our world, is for our good and for the transformation of our thinking and to help us into the eternal kind of life that we were created for. So we do want to spend just a bit of time this morning, at least, focusing on these main friend characters in these verses. Now, we've heard the story of Lazarus ever since early Sunday school days and Bible school days, right? And this is a beautiful visual up here this morning, especially this tie of these grave clothes into the cross and what the cross means and also the resurrection that leads our minds to think about. Lazarus, though, we're not told a whole lot about, other than he was the brother of Mary and Martha. Likely they lived together in the same home. If we think about the culture of that day and the low place that women had, the fact that their brother was living with them was perhaps a source of stability for them, either income-wise or protection-wise. Mary and Martha and Lazarus living in Bethany together. I want to look a bit about at their interactions then with Jesus as well and what we can learn from that. Mary and Martha, I've always been fascinated by. They remind me a lot, or maybe I should say there were childhood congregation members when I was a child in Florida growing up in a small church plant congregation that reminded me of Mary and Martha. Lucy and Sevilla Mast. And there was another couple of women, two sisters living in another household, Esther and Ruth Brubaker. I often, for some reason, when I hear the story of Mary and Martha, I go back to these groupings of sisters that lived together. Never married, lived together for their lives. Actually, well, that's a long story, but anyway. Esther and Ruth, later one of them got married. But anyway, this is what comes to mind for me. So I don't know who comes to mind for you when you think of Mary and Martha. Are there sisters that you think of that either act like or remind you of Mary and Martha? Is this at least a common human picture of sisters living together and what it might be like when we look at Mary and Martha, right? Maybe you are a sister. Maybe you can relate in that sense. But as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Martha, the hospitable one. Now, there may have been word going ahead. Some disciples might have given word that Jesus and the gang are coming by tonight. If you're able to host them, can you? But anyway, all we know is Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. We can just breeze through these verses and read them and not think much about what's being said in these verses, but there's some really pretty earth-shattering stuff going on in here. Mary, sitting at the feet of a Jewish rabbi in a student position, learning from the rabbi. Doesn't seem that odd to us, but in that day, that was odd. This woman being taught by a rabbi. That was unheard of. That didn't happen. Women didn't get taught. Jesus, in his interaction with women, displays for us the equality of worth, the equality of value, the equality of ability to be disciples, to be students of God, of Jesus. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, here's the whining, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Jesus just turns, you can see him, Martha, Martha. You just hear this knowing in his voice. He knows what she's worked up about. He knows her. He knows them. He knows that this isn't the first time this has come up. But he does take this chance maybe to even teach Martha in a sense. You are worried and upset about many things. Let go. But few things are needed. Or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what's better, and it won't be taken from her. Now, this wasn't so much a rebuke of Martha, I don't believe, as it was just an affirmation of Mary, and the fact that this was okay, that Mary was choosing the opportunity to learn from the teacher. There we see some of the complexities of their relationship. They were friends. Jesus depended on them, and yet Jesus was their teacher, and Martha here calls Jesus Lord. So I'm intrigued by the brief interaction that we see and what it kind of tells us about the ways, about the relationship of these three people, Mary and Martha and Jesus. It fascinated me as I went on to the next story in John 11 that it was Martha who first came out to Jesus, but maybe I'm getting ahead of you. But she came out to see him as he was coming to town. She was the first one. She was the first one to name Jesus as Messiah before Mary, the one who had been being taught. Martha, the one who we say is just worried about the house, and we kind of put her down for her utilitarian thinking. She, John names, as the first one to name Jesus. Yes, I know you're the Messiah, the Son of God, come into the world. And then she goes back and gets Mary. I did kind of jump ahead of myself. Because John 11 jumps us into a story saying, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He got really sick, ended up needing to be wrapped in grave clothes, in fact. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and his sister Martha. Now, by jumping in at this verse, what we don't know and what we don't get with the geography piece is that Jesus was not anywhere nearby at that point. He was rather on the other side of Jordan, away from Jerusalem, because if you read the chapter before this, he had just been run out of town, almost stoned. So he wasn't really in a hurry to necessarily come back. So that may speak into at least a bit of, or at least a practical reason for why he just stayed where he was 2 more days. I don't know if it certainly wasn't fear, I'm sure, that he had, but you know, we have to believe Jesus wanted every moment to be a teaching moment with his disciples. He knew that what he was trying to portray to them was so paradigm-shifting, so world-changing for their worldview, that he had to be patient with them, and he had to take every opportunity, because he knew that his message was that disruptive, that he probably wouldn't last long here on earth once the religious authorities would finally get tired of him. So he knew every moment had to count. And so even in this situation, when news comes of a friend being sick, he doesn't anxiously, in a concerned way, quick run off and fix it. Jesus knew somehow that the deepest learning experiences of life sometimes come through hardships and tragedies and trials and loss. Not that Jesus is being manipulative and saying, I'm just going to wait for Lazarus to die. Then I can go raise him from the dead. Then everybody will be really impressed. And then I'll last a little longer around here because I have more people for me. No, I don't think Jesus is being manipulative like that. But Jesus was aware this was an opportunity for him to show those who were his friends and disciples that there's more to this life than just breathing and being alive. There's more to being connected to the Father as Jesus was. There is such ability to let go and trust in God that you do not have to react anxiously to every hysterical situation. Couldn't our world today use a little bit of that? What if Jesus was taking this opportunity to teach his friends, his disciples, to not be so anxious, not be so worried? So then he said to his disciples, after those 2 days, let's go back to Judea. And then it was the disciples, Rabbi, a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back? Hello? What do you think how this is going to produce? What do you think this is going to accomplish? Now, I'm not certain that I'm going to even try to or could unpack this next answer of Jesus, but just say that he's always trying to teach and get people to think, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they will see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light. After he said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. And of course, the disciples, well, yeah, we heard he was sick, of course. Yeah, he's sleeping. That's good. Worst of the sickness is over. Let him sleep. Let him rest. He'll get better. No, he told them plainly, Lazarus actually is dead. I was trying to ease that in, that news to you, but no, he's dead. But for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe. So we see this constant back and forth of Jesus trying to walk this tightrope of teacher and Lord and friend. Caring about those who are the one who is sick, caring about the sisters who are going to be grieving the death, and yet knowing that perhaps this wasn't the right time, knowing the perfect time to enter the scene, knowing the perfect way in which to work with all of these people in all of their complex ways that they're tied to Lazarus, whether it was Lazarus himself who was dying, whether it was his sisters who depended on him for their stability, who would be less stable with him not around, whether it was his disciples who are worried about protecting him from the mobs that are back there. Jesus was constantly walking this tightrope with his friends. You think he walks that tightrope today still? Or do we all get it equally and fully and make it really easy for Jesus to make sense to us? Can you imagine Jesus having to deal with all of us at once and our conflicting and competing understandings and views of life and views of God's will and all of that? Jesus is a friend to all of us, to those on both sides of every divide that we create as humans. Whether it's the Mexico-U.S. divide, whether it is a theological divide, whether it is denominational divides, whether it's gender divides, Jesus is with and friends of everyone on every side of every divide that we create as humans, as sisters, as brothers. So we see Jesus returning, heading back to Bethany, knowing that he wants to be with Mary and Martha, who he knows are grieving. And he thinks this might be a good opportunity to teach what the resurrection power of God looks like and can mean for his followers, for his friends, for his disciples. When he says that, now I'm looking for the verse back in verse 4 in John 11 when he says that this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory so that God's Son may be glorified through it. He's not just talking about the immediate event that if he raises Lazarus from the dead, it'll be for his glory and people will then believe in him. Rather, he's saying what you're going to see transpire over the next few days, because he knew what was going to happen, is to show you the resurrection power of God in your lives, even when you think it is hopeless, even when it's that fourth day beyond the third day when Jesus was going to come back from the dead, even on that hopeless fourth day of Lazarus' death, the resurrection power of God was going to be seen. It was going to create a lot of excitement in a lot of people, and they were going to want to follow him, and he knew it was going to get the religious leaders all that more riled up and all that more set on his death, and he knew it was that. The showing of his own willingness to give even his own life for those he loved. The willingness to let love take its full course, even if it led to death. That is what was going to show God's glory and glorify him as the Son of God. Because if you read through all of these chapters, 10, 11, 12, right in a row, you see this domino effect of events. Our text, this happens to be a lectionary breakdown of this text, of this story, stops at verse 44. If you go on to verse 45, immediately you see the religious leaders' reaction to this and what happens. And the fact that they're planning and plotting Jesus' death right after this. Jesus knew this is what was going to unfold. And yet Jesus went to Bethany, his place of retreat, his place of usually getting to get away from things to get right into the thick of it. He knew he was going back into that area where he had just almost been stoned. He knew he was going into the area where the religious leaders would be following him and watching him, seeing what he did, knowing that people were going to be wowed by this, knowing that they were going to want to follow him all the more. It was going to cause the religious leaders even more anger. Jesus knew all that, and yet Jesus said, "Let's go to Bethany." Jesus was willing to enter in to all their human dynamics and divides and their illness and their death, even if it meant giving his own life. But Jesus said, "Let's go to Bethany." So the rest of the story, I'm actually not going to focus on. We see this beautiful visual that reminds us of what did happen. The beautiful gift of Lazarus' life being restored, perhaps at least for a period of time, Mary and Martha's stability and relationship with their brother being able to be restored. Jesus did say that this sickness won't lead to death. Didn't mean that Lazarus never died, but this wasn't the time. This sickness didn't, but in this sickness, in the midst of this tragic event, God's power was able to be seen, God's love was able to be seen. Being a friend of Jesus isn't something we can just claim. These friends of Jesus that we have focused on in Bethany today earned the right to be called friend by Jesus because Jesus could depend on them. They were there for Jesus. They participated with Jesus and protected Jesus and followed Jesus and learned from Jesus. That is what made them friends of Jesus. In the same way for us today, being a friend of Jesus isn't something we can just claim. It takes specific choices and actions that end up showing our friendship, proving our friendship, getting us to the point that Jesus calls us friends. There are so many ways we can do that in today's broken world. To which of those actions do you sense Jesus inviting you into today? Let's pray together. God, we're going to just